Or you can just even cut it. After.
Oh, okay. Anyone?
Okay, welcome everyone. Thank you so much for coming. This is super exciting. I'm Rachel Simmons, by the way, for some of you that don't know. I'm the Director of Spiritual Guidance here. And I have to tell you that I am truly inspired by seeing all of you here today. This is an amazing, really just a show of your love of Torah, and especially when you're on vacation, to come in back to school and to be here for this really special day. We're really looking forward to an amazing, amazing, wonderful program. I do have to give special thanks to Mayrav Golds and Ariella Lunzer, who came into my office. They came into my office literally about 2 weeks ago and said, how about this idea of a Yom Iyun or a learning program? And I said to them, you know, vacation's in 4 days. So, long story short, here we are, and we are really, really impressed. And they did a great job. They worked so hard. And I also have to thank Talia Malasky, Adina Fink, and Hani Grossman for really helping with all the different elements and different pieces of putting this together. I especially also want to thank Rabbi Brander, who is the Vice President of University and Community Life, for really helping us. When I came to him and I said this idea, which I thought was a little bit crazy, he gave the go-ahead and said, let's do it. This is amazing. So really, without him, this day would not have come to be, and we really owe him a really huge debt of gratitude. This is really amazing. And without further ado, oh, I want to mention one more thing, that today's learning will be in Refuah Shleima for the Tzchus of Refuah Shleima for Chanah Bas Rachelea, who's going under, she is dealing with cancer now, so we would like the day to be dedicated for Refuah Shleima. And without further ado, I'd like to introduce Rabbi Brander.
Thank you so much. Good morning, everyone. This is a wonderful opportunity. I think this is the first time that Stern College has ran a Yom Iyun for its students after school is officially over. So I want to thank the student leaders who put it together, and I want to thank Revitzin Cement for the wonderful leadership role that she plays on the campus in general, and specifically helping to organize programs like this. I have the easiest job. I'm able to say yes, but the hard work is what you guys have done, and call it kavod. And you also picked a very important topic, a little bit of a challenging topic, and that is, I don't have the sheet in front of me, and my sight is not so good to be able to totally pick it off that that flyer, but basically focusing on the challenges or the roles that women can play within the Jewish community, our responsibilities for women to play roles, the whole idea of women playing roles in the development of Klal Yisrael, which women have always played the most important and central role, and that is the continuing of generations and making sure they're properly educated. Rabbi Soloveitchik, in a very famous article that he wrote as a tribute to the Rebbetzin of Talna, speaks about his mother and his father. And keep in mind that Rabbi Soloveitchik was homeschooled after a very interesting incident when he had a tutor. Rabbi Soloveitchik initially, he grew up in a place called Chaslovich. It was a Chabad town. And why a Misnagdisha family would be the Rabbanim of a Chabad town is a longer story that we don't have time for. But he had a tutor, Rabbi Soloveitchik, when he was a young boy. And his mother realized that he wasn't learning the Gemara properly with his tutor. His mother went to Rabbi Soloveitchik's father, to Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. Rav Moshe Soloveitchik didn't fully appreciate the enormity of the challenge. Rabbi Soloveitchik's mother wrote a letter to Rabbi Soloveitchik's grandfather and said that Beryl, the nickname for Rabbi Soloveitchik, that Beryl, that Beryl wasn't learning properly. And so Rabbi Soloveitchik's grandfather came to town, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, and tested him on the Gemara that he was supposed to be learning, and sure enough, he really didn't know it. And then he asked him, well, what are you learning? What are you learning? And it turns out that the Gemaras are quite large, and embedded within the Gemara was a Tanya. And the Chabad Malamed, the Chabad tutor, it looked like when you passed by that they were learning Gemara, but what was really happening was he was teaching Rabbi Soloveitchik Tanya. And at that point, when Rabbi Soloveitchik's grandfather asked him, what are you learning? He just repeated all of Tanya Baal Peh. And what happened at that point in time is when they realized that the Chabad Malamed, which actually Rabbi Soloveitchik caught up with during the time of the communist Russia, there was at least by a correspondence, by letter, Rabbi Soloveitchik's father decided that from now on, he would teach him. And they learned dozens of mesechtas together. Dozens of mesechtas. Rabbi Soloveitchik writes in this article that without his mother, he would have grown up as a soulless human being, not feeling God on his frail shoulder. So while he learned every single day in a formal sense with his father, in a real sense, Rabbi Soloveitchik would speak in such glowing terms about the energy and the passion and the ability to have a romantic rendezvous, which was his words, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which really established by his mother. So the first thing I think we need to understand is that this whole idea of new roles for women, which is something that is important for us to discuss in serious and in significant ways, let's not forget the most important role, and that is the guaranteeing of the eternality and the immortality of the Jewish people, and the most central institution that the Jewish people have, and that is the family structure that is orchestrated in very significant ways by the Akaret Habayis, by the women of the home. That being said, I have the privilege of playing a leadership role in the graduate program of Advanced Talmud Study, which actually was started by, I think this is a very not well-known fact, but it actually was started by some of the Rosh Yeshiva at YU, including Rabbi Rosenzweig. And it's important at the same time that we make sure that Torah Lishma and the ability for women to be educated on the highest level, following in the paradigm that Rabbi Soloveitchik led by giving that famous class at Stern College in Talmud, is something that we also celebrate because it highlights the idea that if women can get PhDs and advanced degrees and all other components of knowledge, why isn't it that we make sure that women have the capacity to have fully understand Torah and all of its components of Mesorah so that roles that both men and women play should be based on an understanding of the Mesorah, understanding of the appropriate halachic development of Torah, and therefore, if a woman has the capacity to be involved in all the other disciplines, why not give a woman the opportunity to study Tanakh in depth? Why not give a woman the ability to study Gemara in depth and appreciate the Mesorah in very significant ways? So, by way of introduction, I just want to say that I am sure that whatever I say today will not be totally satisfied. Not everyone's going to be totally satisfied with this issue. I'm sure you're all aware of, unless you live in some wonderful island somewhere where you don't get any of the Jewish papers. We should all be blessed on occasion to have that. It's playing out in the community as present, and I recognize that the shear on this issue is a work in progress. And let's also understand something, that Yeshiva University is a big tent. And I don't represent everyone at Yeshiva University. I'm trying to represent myself. And it should be understood that this is my perspective. And it's important that if you want future or additional understanding of this issue, that you should speak to the people who are of significant poskim at Yeshiva University, which I am not, and have conversations with them on this issue. And we have to realize that the Orthodox community is not monolithic in anything. There are those who believe that Medinat Yisrael brings Geula, and there are those that believe that Medinat Yisrael hampers the Geula. There are people who will define, as I was driving here today, I was working with one of our Rabbanim in the field who's dealing with the definition of death for the first time as a rabbi. There are people who define death in one way. There are serious gedolim who define it one way, and serious gedolim and poskim who define it a different way. There are people who feel that women learning text is forbidden, based on the Gemara that says kol malamed is bito Torah malamda tiflus. And then you have both the Chafetz Chaim, and then eventually Rabbi Soloveitchik, in cooperation with the Lubavitcher Rebbe and others, that believe that part of the advancing of the agenda of the future of Torah is that, as Rav Aaron Lichtenstein Zatzal would paraphrase, anyone who doesn't teach their daughter Torah Shabbat Peh is involved in teaching them tiflus, is involved in teaching them foolishness. And so I'd like to hope that we could have unity without uniformity and diversity without divisiveness. Unfortunately, that doesn't always happen. And it's important also to realize that as we discuss this issue about this glass ceiling, that we have to realize that there are two lenses. There is the concrete lens of halacha, which we'll discuss. And I think it's also important to understand there's Mesorah, there's Das Torah, what I would call meta-narratives of community and society. And they're both important. It can't be like, if you don't show me a proof that you can't do this, then all of a sudden it's permitted, because I think there are larger narratives that need to play out in the community. And I think that that's of critical importance also. And I will try to incorporate both of those ideals in the material that I'm going to present to you. Okay, so let's open up the handout. The first source is a source from Shulchan Aruch, where it speaks about the idea of what exactly is smicha. What is exactly smicha now? Smicha has changed, and it used to be before. It was one thing as you had smicha through Sanhedrin, etc., etc. It was one type of ideal, and smicha has changed to something very different. And the Shulchan Aruch tells us, "Asur la'adam l'horos l'fnei rabo la'olam v'chol amora l'fanav chayiv misa." You can't give smicha. You can't answer halakhic questions in front of your rebbe, and whoever does is chayiv misa. And then it goes on. We're not going to read the whole Ramah, but the last lines of the Ramah, "Asur la'horos ad she'mos rabo o ad she'itein lo rishus." Either it's forbidden to answer halakhic questions in front of your rebbe until he gives you permission, until he passes away, or until he gives you permission. And smicha is a way of us determining that a person has studied a corpus of knowledge and has a certain amount of knowledge, and sometimes that means simply being able to refer the issue to someone who has more knowledge, but most of the time, hopefully, it means that they've studied an issue and they're willing to tackle the halakhic questions that are put in front of them. And the Ramah continues on and says, where I have highlighted, Inyan hasmichut shenagu b'zman hazeh, the notion of smicha in this period of time, kidei sheyedu kol ha'am shehigia lehora umasha morahu b'rshut rabo hasomcho, that the person has studied, he has achieved a certain knowledge in this issue, and therefore he has the permission of his Rebbe, and he is paskening within the rubric of what his Rebbe has taught him. Go on, v'yesh omrim d'misha eno musmach l'morenu v'nosein gittin v'chalitzut ein b'masav kolom, and understand that if someone doesn't have smicha, doesn't go through this rigorous process, when they're involved in important issues like gittin or chalitza or other issues of that nature, then, you know, tragically, those gittin can be viewed as empty gestures, which obviously can create significantly challenging issues here. And then it goes on about a few other issues, whether somebody who has anivus, you know, what their paradigm is, whether they can, they don't want to get smicha, but they have the knowledge, whether we accept them or not, etc., etc., etc. Now, It's interesting that the Ramah has two other points that are important for us to really understand when it comes to ordaining people. The first I would like to do actually is skip a source, and that is go to source number 3. In source number 3, the Ramah has an interesting halacha. Hakol shochtim l'chachila afilu nashim. Anyone can do the ritual slaughtering, the shechita, even women. Yesh omrim, the Ramah says, she'ein laniach nashim l'shchot. Now you shouldn't let women do shechita. She'kvar nagu shelo l'shchot. The minhag is that they can't do shechita. Now notice here, it's not that it's halachically usur in any formal way, but it's the minhag. And a minhag in halacha is not a small thing. Minhag in halacha represents a certain component of Mesorah, and we are bound to Mesorah. V'chein ha-minag she'ein ha-nashim shchotot. And we have, or shchotot, that we have this idea that women are not, do not perform ritual slaughter. So the question is, why is it that the Ramah forbids women from being involved in ritual slaughter? Can someone give a suggestion of what it might be? Yes.
I think it's possible just historically when we're from, I don't know, maybe moving away from everyone doing their own shechita home to a more centralized form of shechita. So maybe it's that the woman can do the work herself, but when it's more...
Well, why would it be any different? I would assume that if a woman has expertise in shechita, she should do it for everybody. Yes?
Like, she's being, like, in charge of what other men
do. Okay. So, but then why was it ever permitted? If that's an issue, why is it ever permitted then? Anyone else? So, both of these are excellent ideas mentioned. Rabbi Soloveitchik, when he taught this, felt that the reason why the Ramah moved away from women being ritual slaughterers was because there became a time in history that the shochet wasn't just the ritual slaughterer, but he was the posek. He became basically the rabbi for the community. And at a time in which there weren't rabbis in every community, but rather the shochet was doing more than the act of ritual slaughter, but actually was playing the role of being the ambassador on all issues of halacha, that became a position that was not appropriate for women to be engaged in. And therefore, since it now took on a communal role more than just the ritual slaughter, but something larger, that the Ramah moved away from allowing women to play that role. It's not because they didn't have the capacity. It's just when shechita started to be something larger, then, you know, the job description wasn't just about slaughtering animals, but it was about answering other halakhic questions and playing that communal role. It was that communal role that was inconsistent with the minhag, and therefore it became something that the Ramah began to speak out against women being engaged in. This is also consistent with another issue that the Ramah has in source 2, the shoot of the Ramah in Siman Chavdal. I apologize that we won't go into all these sources inside. I still think it's important that I present them to you so that it's not just my ideas, but more importantly, like the ideas of the Ramah. Where the Ramah, who was the major postgate for Ashkenazic Jewry, says that someone who receives any form of smicha has to have the potential, the scope has to be that they're able to serve as a theoretically, as a member of Sanhedrin. Initially, smicha was part of the Sanhedrin process, and therefore, even now, for a person to get smicha, you can have smicha. I highlighted like 4 words: nira de ein lach shira lachatzaim. You cannot give smicha to a person who cannot fulfill the entire bandwidth of the process of serving on Sanhedrin, which limits the role of women, because while women can play active roles, which we'll discuss, leadership roles within the Jewish community, they cannot be a member of the Sanhedrin. And since they cannot be a member of the Sanhedrin, it might be that that deters us from allowing women to actually have any form of ordination, because if you follow the Ramah, he has two different issues. Number one is his prohibition of shochtim, because he did not want women to be playing that formal communal role that was foisted upon the shochet, that he wouldn't just shecht animals, but he would answer halakhic questions. And the prohibition that the Rama mentions of not having smicha l'chatzayim, not having smicha to a candidate who might be tremendously well-versed in the halachas of Yoredeya, but if they can't fill the entire scope of the license, then they can't theoretically receive or practically receive smicha. By the way, this Rama would pose another question, just to be, again, totally intellectually transparent, and that is, could men who are converts receive smicha? Because men who are converts there could be issues with men who are converts also, which we'll get into in our next statement, in our next set of halachot. But for our conversation right now, you see two issues that Rama had with ordination for women. One finds itself in the shochet paradigm, and one in the fact that if you can't fulfill the entire scope of the license, you cannot play the full role. Okay? We good? Yes. Right, so, no, the Gemara, we'll go into it actually. There's a certain prerequisites about who can be on the Sanhedrin, and women were not appropriate candidates for the Sanhedrin. I don't think it's because women are inferior or anything else like that. I think it's a recognition of the fact that there are different roles for different persons, you know, within the Jewish community, and the recognition of the fact that the Sanhedrin was reserved for certain candidates, and one of the prerequisites was that the person had to be male, and therefore a woman could not be a member of the Sanhedrin. Let's go through this. We'll see that there are other opportunities for women to play leadership roles, and there are women who have played leadership roles in the past. Why don't we just look at some of those, I'll take some more questions. Unless you... Okay, please. That's a good question. If a shochet does the action itself and doesn't play those roles, I would assume that once the Rama passed in that it's a minhag, that we don't just break minhagim, especially in a case where the minhag, the reason for the minhag, is not being articulated here. And I think that we should just realize that in this case, I don't think it's as important to recognize the fact that they couldn't be shochtim. I think it's important to understand Rabbi Soloveitchik's feelings on it. Was he felt that at this time in history, when this minhag came about, is because that certain communal roles women should not be engaged in, and that's an important idea for us to mention for two reasons. And that is, most of the time, Rabbi Soloveitchik is used as the authority that engaged women to play significant roles within the Jewish community. So it's important in an honest conversation to recognize that while that is clearly true, and we're going to discuss some of that in a moment, it's also important to recognize that he is the same individual that when he studied this Rama in multiple generations of students that he had, he reminded those students when he studied this Siman and Shulchan Aruch that the reason why the Rama changed what the Mechaber permits, what the Ashkenaz, what the Sfardim permit, he was concerned about the communal construct that the Shochet played. Whether that would apply now when the Shochet is just buried somewhere in Iowa and just, you know, shechting on their own or something like that is an interesting question about Shechita. It doesn't take away from the issue that we're mentioning here, and that is a concern for certain communal roles being put on women, and the fact that he feels that that is why the Ramah came to its conclusions. Okay. Now, there is another issue. I think it's important that I'm trying to make sure that this is not just the conclusions are different than the ones that I'm just sharing with you now. But I think it's important that we look at some of the hard halachot and recognize the fact that when these issues are being discussed, sometimes these halachot are not being cited. And I think we do ourselves an injustice if we don't look at the entire picture. In source number 4, we are introduced to the Rambam, where the Rambam, based on the prohibition of making, based on the issue of kingship, has the following halacha. The Rambam Hilchot Melachim says, Ein ma'midim melech mikahal gerim. You cannot make a king. A king cannot come from be a descendant of a convert. And he goes even further, and he says, V'lo l'malchut bovad, would have underlined, Ella l'kol srarot shebi Yisrael. All other jobs, all other leadership jobs that a convert cannot play the role, the communal, an autonomous, authoritative communal role. The Rambam is taking the prohibition of a convert not playing a role of king, and he exports that law to all, autocratic, powerful roles that there are within the Jewish communal structure. And he says that that doesn't just apply for a convert, that also applies for a woman. Because it's not the Rambam, it's the Gemara, it's Medrash Halacha. Halacha hey, ein ma'midin isha b'malchut. You don't choose a woman to be the king, shenemar, because it says, som tasim alecha melech. It says in Devarim, in Sefer Devarim, you should choose a king. Melech v'lo malka, a king and not a queen. And therefore, the Rambam in Halacha hey says, and this is true, this principle also applies to all other positions of authority within Israel. Only men should be appointed to them. So once again, you see that the Rambam is suggesting that there's a different additional prohibition, and that is the notion of srara, that there's a prohibition of women playing the leadership role of srara. What, I've got 10 minutes? Whoa. What is the issue of srara? I'm going to take 15, okay? What's the issue of srara? And that is the issue of having this authoritative role over other Jews. And the Rambam clearly extends the prohibition of king to other leadership roles. Now the Rambam in this is a lone voice. If you turn to the next page, source number 5, you'll see the Sefer HaChinuch, who normally marches to the same tune as the Rambam. There are very few differences between the Rambam and the Sefer HaChinuch. This happens to be one of them, and that is that the Rambam says, the Sefer HaChinuch says that the prohibition of a melech, a lo malka, of a king and not a queen, is basically just limited to kingship and does not apply to other leadership roles. She'ein ma'midim isha b'malchut, she'nemar melech v'lo malka. The Sefer HaChinuch says you can't appoint a woman to be the king, but the Sefer HaChinuch does not extend it in the way the Rambam extends it, that srara becomes a prohibition of all-consuming to all authoritative roles within the Jewish community. Now, what is the definition of srara, even according to the Rambam? What is the definition of srara? Some may suggest that srara means any authoritative leadership role. So, for example, can a woman be a dean of a college? After all, in many ways, the dean of a college can make life and death decisions for the future of a student. You know, who gets into medical school, who doesn't get into medical school, who gets into this graduate school, who doesn't get into that graduate school. Maybe srara prohibits a woman from being a head of school, not just a dean, but a head of school. What exactly are the limitations of the notion of srara? And is the prohibition of srara according to the Rambam, would that prohibit a woman from being a rabbi? Admittedly, one would suggest that only the Rambam extends the prohibition of Srara to other roles other than king. And perhaps even if you extended the role like the Rambam done to others, anyone who davens in Eshul knows that the rabbi is by no means a fully authoritative role. You can ask Rebbetzin Cement, even though she was just honored with her husband for the wonderful work they're doing in the community. Her husband does not have full reign over everything. He doesn't sign checks for the shul. He doesn't make the decisions alone. He'll make certain halakhic decisions alone, but he won't make the major decisions. If the synagogue wants to fire or hire somebody, he doesn't do that alone. That is something that there's a checks and balances. So even according to the Rambam, perhaps the prohibition of a woman having the title of rabbi would not be an issue of srara, would not be a concern of srara, because even according to the Rambam, women, a rabbi does not have full autonomy. I served as a rav for 24 years before working at YU. I'm telling you, rabbis don't have full authority, even if they have the privilege of building institutions. They don't have, you know, they don't have full authority. There's a checks and balances that go on between the lay kodesh and the clay kodesh. In addition, if we turn to source number 7 and 8, we will see that in sources 7 and 8, we talk about Devorah. And Devorah, the prophetess Devorah, the Gemara in Nida, the Tosfos in Nida, in source number 8, discusses the idea that it says that that Devorah was a shofetes, that she was that she answered halachic decisions for the Jewish people. And the Gemara then asks, how is it possible, or Tosfos just asks, how is it possible for her to do that? Is a woman halakhically appropriate to be a judge? Look at source number 8. Vim toma v'ari isha d'kshira ladun. Is it possible for a woman to judge? K'diktiv b'devora. It says by devora that she was the judge over the Jewish people. And we paskin that a woman cannot play that role. So there's a few answers that that are given. The first answer given by Tosfos is that she judged by Ruach HaKodesh, and therefore this prohibition did not apply for her. But the second answer given by Tosfos, Inami, which by the way, in the understanding, the style of Tosfos, his second answer, Inami, is always his predominant and his strongest answer. They're not equals. If you understand Kolei HaTosfos, the basic principles of the building of Tosfos, the Inami is really his final conclusive answer. And the answer is, Lo heita dana, she was not a judge, but rather, ela melamedet lehem hadayanim. She taught the judges. She had Torah knowledge, significant Torah knowledge, and while she didn't play the formal role of a judge, but she played a role, perhaps even more importantly, and that is, she played the role of somebody who taught the judges. She prepared all of the court judges to make sure that they had the knowledge. She gave the bechinas to the men judges, to the male judges, to make sure that they were prepared properly. And the Pischei Tshuva writes, the source above that, the Pischei Tshuva writes, it's important that, you know, and the Pischei Tshuva, which is a important commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, who lived in the 1800s, the Pischei Tshuva writes that it's important to recognize, af the isha psul ladun, a woman is forbidden to judge. Mikol makom, isha chachma yichola lahoros hora. A woman who has knowledge, and that knowledge is accepted by the community, is permitted to answer halachic questions. And we learn that from the paradigm of Devorah, that a woman who has knowledge on certain issues is allowed to answer the questions on those issues. Which leads us to the fact that there was actually, and I'm giving you, this was a supplementary handout. For some reason, it didn't make it into it. One of the former chief rabbis in Eretz Yisrael, Rabbi Bakshi Daron, says the following in his responsive literature: Mikol ha'amor nira she'isha v'ger yecholim l'shamesh kimanhigim v'afilu ki gedolei hador, that a isha and a ger can serve as leaders and answer halachic questions and study Torah and teach Torah, etc., etc., etc. Now, people look at this and explains because when women are playing these roles and they are accepted democratically, it is accepted by the community that they want the woman to play this role of answering halachic questions, then that is not a srara issue. Because a srara issue is when you have a community leader that is foisted upon you, that is that you're obligated to listen to, like the community rabbi, whether you voted for his contract or not, you're obligated to listen to him. But a woman who is accepted for her knowledge to play a leadership role, a teaching role, answering halachic questions role, that there is no halachic problem with it, based on the Pesachei Tshuva, based on the Tosfos regarding Devora, where a woman who has knowledge is permitted to share that knowledge and teach it to all of the Jewish judges and to answer halachic questions. This also became really the springboard for allowing women to play leadership roles in the Knesset. There was a plethora of halachic questions. Could you vote for a woman in the Knesset? After all, that's a sarara issue, or it might be other issues of that nature. It's a manhig issue, a leadership issue. And therefore, if a woman is elected democratically, it follows the paradigm of Devora, at least on one level, not the knowledge level. And I'm not focusing on female members of Knesset versus male members of Knesset, but rather on the idea that if it's democratically accepted upon you, as the Pesachei Tshuva is mentioning, that if the community wants Yechola Lahoros Hora, if it's accepted upon them and they want them to play that leadership role, then they're able to play that leadership role within the Knesset. Now, I've given you several different things, and I'd like to now tie them and try to bring them together. And that is the following. We've seen three basically sets of sources. One is the Rama. The Rama clearly states that he has concerns with a woman getting the title of smicha. Two differences. One's from the Shavuos and Tshuvas, that a person who gets the title of smicha has to have the candidacy to be in the Sanhedrin, and a woman can't have that candidacy. We see the machlokas between the Rambam and the Sefer Achinuch about the issue of srara. Does a woman fall under the category of srara for other leadership roles other than king of the Jewish people? Where the Rambam says yes, and the Sefer Achinuch says no. And then we see the clear permission that is based on the Tosfos and the Pesachei Tshuva for women to play accepted, when I mean accepted, roles that the community accepts that a woman could play, and that is to answer halachic questions based on the fact that she has the corpus of knowledge to be able to answer those halachic questions. We see from the Pesachei Tshuva, and we see from the earlier from the Tosfos, as well as Rav Bakshi Doron putting that in context. By the way, some people try to use Rav Bakshi Doron as permission to give women the title of Rav, and Rav Bakshi Doron immediately issued a letter saying, that's not what I said. I didn't say that they could have the title of Rav. He's concerned about the Rama also, but the idea that they can play leadership roles in the community. So where does this lead us to conclude? Where does this lead us to? I think that it's important to recognize the fact that the title of giving a woman a title like Maharat or Rabbah or titles of that nature, I think is of concern. I think is of concern for a few different reasons. And by the way, I have nothing negative to say about the women who are studying for that title. I actually had the privilege of koshering Sarah Horowitz's house when she became Shomer Shabbos. They lived in Boca Raton. I remember koshering their house. Nothing negative to say. I'm not here to judge people. I don't know them well enough. And I assume that everyone tries to do what they want to do to grow the Jewish people in appropriate ways. So I'm not going to in any way cast aspersions on anybody else. But I think, from my perspective, and I speak as an individual and somebody who has some involvement in community, I think it's dangerous because I think it does not incorporate all of the issues in halacha. I think that the Rama is clearly not an advocate for titles of that nature. It's clear. And I think if one wants to use the Rambam in Sarara issues, giving that title, which sometimes has a Sarara component to it, is also of a concern. But one does not need the Rambam. One can just stop with the Ramah and recognize that there's an issue here. And I have larger concerns about that. My larger concerns about this issue is something different, and that is, I truly believe with every fiber of my body that we need to make sure that women are as educated as men. I truly believe that the experience of Torah Lishma is something that both men and women have to have without any ceilings, without any glass ceilings, without any boundaries. It's not a new idea, but it is an idea that many of us in the Jewish community have worked very hard for. Listen, Stern College represents that. The graduate program in advanced Talmud studies, which we all know at one point in time was questionable whether it was going to continue or not, represents that. And one of the reasons why I became so engaged with the graduate program in advanced Talmud studies, with so many others, was because we wanted to make sure that it would continue to grow and flourish. And I actually think that the graduate program in advanced Talmud studies should grow to a graduate program in advanced Talmud and Bible studies, that women should not only be able to learn Gemara all day, they should be able to learn Tanakh all day in a very serious and rigorous way. And here's the interesting thing. We already have the permission from New York State to actually give a degree in biblical interpretation. So it's not like we need permission to give the degree. We just haven't ever set up that additional component of the graduate program. The permission is there from New York State. We just haven't implemented it yet. And I think that from that knowledge, there are opportunities for women to play serious roles within the Jewish community, should they wish. No different than YU gives men opportunities within its smicha program, although I want to make sure that before I end, I create a serious Chinese wall between them at the same time. But the same way, we do not demand that somebody who goes into rabbinical school, or for that matter, the graduate school of education or the graduate school of Jewish history and philosophy, that they must teach or must serve within the Jewish community. That's not the goal of giving women education. The goal of giving women education is that they have the ability to understand the beauty and the depth of Torah, to understand the machlokes between Ravina and Ravashi, to understand the development of Beit Shammai and Beis Hillel, to understand the Masorah from the Medrash Halacha to the Mishnayos, to the Gemaras, to the Tur Shulchan Aruch, the Shulchan Aruch, you know, Rishonim, and understand modern Pesach, and understand how each one builds and stands on the shoulders of the next, and doesn't just make decisions for their household or for their future or for their family's future based on something that's found in some book somewhere that basically just gives them the final summary, but understands the beauty and the tapestry of Torah Sheba'al Peh and of Torah Sheb'Ksav. From that, there's unbelievable opportunities for women. There is a dearth of women role models. There's a dearth of women who have the capacity to teach on the highest level. For every one woman that graduates GPATS, there's 5 job offers that they get at this point in time. Whether it's to teach Gemara in one of the local yeshiva high schools, whether it's to teach in schools in Israel, whether it's to serve as part of the JLIC community with a spouse, without a spouse, the amount of requests that we have right now for women to go out and teach on college campuses, if we tripled the size of GPATS tomorrow, we couldn't fill all of the requests. And in addition to that, there are also opportunities, I believe, for women to play within synagogues, not as rabbis, but as educators. Most synagogues have educators. Most large synagogues have educators. And the need for women to be able to educate other women is a way of empowering the next generation. I saw in a shul that I had the privilege of working with that grew from 60 to 600 families, that when you empowered people to recognize the beauty of Torah, which many times women teaching women and women teaching even mixed groups have the capacity to do it more effectively than men, you change the future of themselves and of their families. There are so many opportunities to give women the unbelievable opportunity to be able to change the Jewish world without fostering the need for new titles and new agendas that just challenge the whole idea of women's roles. Because what has happened by announcing new titles, it's not that women have gotten new positions, it's just that we're all very circumspect and reflective about any roles that women play because we're afraid that it's going to be tagged as something that is feminist over lishma. And that tagging has compromised the ability to move the women's roles within the Masorah forward, because understandably so, the Torah personalities of this generation have to ask themselves, what is at the root of this movement forward? Is it like the paradigm of Devorah, that she's playing a role that allows the next generation to understand Torah better? Or if there are other external agendas that are being mounted here? And we have to realize that leadership is about being two steps ahead on the educational curve and not making colossal turns on these issues without having conversations with other individuals. When the Chafetz Chaim announced that he was going to support the Beis Yaakov movement, he did not do it on his own. He spoke to other Torah personalities. When Rabbi Willig decided that he was going to introduce the prenup agreement, he had every ability to do it on his own. He has the Torah knowledge. He based it on principles. But he didn't do that. He traveled around the world to make sure that he had buy-in from other poskim. When the new titles for women were introduced, there was no conversation with the larger Torah world of how they feel on this issue. And by having no conversation on this issue, what it jeopardized is, in my opinion, all of the unbelievable work that's happening in places like a graduate program in advanced Talmud studies. And although there is not a clear uniformity of embracing the notion of Yoetzot, even the notion of a Yoetzet and the role that they play, which I believe in certain communities is significant and important, also became challenged because you weren't sure if that's part of this newfangled thing or it's part of a halachic development based on the Devorah paradigms, based on the Pesachei Tshuva, based on the Minchas Chinuch, and based on everything else that we have learned here together. And what has happened is it has created a tremendous rift within the Jewish community, and unfortunately, at the present at least, not allowed us to have a certain sense of unity, which is sad. I want to just give you one example of the Yoetzet thing, just because I think it's important to give an example. So, and it's not a private example, or else I wouldn't obviously give it. When the whole issue happened in Washington, D.C., the whole Freindel issue happened in Washington, D.C., so there were certain institutions that were challenged. One of the institutions that were challenged was the mikveh. After all, the mikveh was under his leadership. The mikveh is the place where all of these horrific things happened. And the question was, how was the community going to rebuild the mikveh? And for around 10 months, I served as the posek for the Kesher Israel community. And you had questions that were like so heart-wrenching. There were questions like women who normally the tradition is to go at night. They didn't want to go at night because once they got over the fact that they wanted to go to the mikveh again and they decided they wanted to go to the mikveh again, they were afraid that if they would go at night and meet some of their friends at night, they might like freak out because of the past background. So they wanted to go during the day. And there are serious halachic challenges, rachbita, other challenges with that. And I spoke to some of the Rosh Yeshiva at YU to get guidance on these issues. But the bottom line is that the reason why the mikveh became strong again was because of Nechama Price. Because as a male, I felt that I did not have the capacity, even though we rewrote the protocols for the mikveh and we made sure the mikveh was halachically okay, but having Nechama Price there and serving basically as a woman that other women could turn to, gave women the permission once again to feel comfortable going to mikveh. It is as clear as day to me that if she was not around to play that informative role, there are a half a dozen women that I am aware of, it might be larger than that, who would not be going to mikveh again at this point in time. Now, in communities in which the Rebbetzin plays that role, so maybe it's not necessary. But there are thousands of women that turn to Yoatzot for guidance and for direction. And I want to make it clear that I speak only for myself, and there's clearly a difference amongst serious Torah personalities who care as much or more for women than I do on the role of Yoatzot. But the whole notion of women playing leadership roles as teachers and as educators in the Jewish community, the whole notion of the playing roles as Yoatzot in the Jewish community becomes intermixed with newfangled titles that there was no collaboration, no conversation, no interaction whatsoever. And what happens is all of it becomes challenged, and all of it becomes an issue, and all of it becomes a concern. And that is what we're living with right now. So in conclusion, I totally believe that based on the sources, even though there may be limitations regarding titles, there are tremendous opportunities once women have the knowledge and study Lishma, they decide to go and serve the Jewish community. There's tremendous opportunities for them. There's opportunities for them to be teachers of the Jewish community, to teach in our local yeshiva high schools and our local seminaries in Israel, to teach on the college campuses, and to engage as educators within synagogues. There are these unbelievable opportunities, and there are more requests for it than we can fill at the present time. I can give you a half a dozen schools that want those roles that we simply are not filling at this present time. But we also have to remember that our decisions have to be based, our movements on these issues have to be really rooted in halacha, and not just in the text of halacha that we shared, but also in the Mesorah, in having conversations with serious poskim who live and breathe these issues on a regular basis, and make sure that there's somewhat of some type of consensus to move forward so that we can ensure that when we advocate for women playing these roles, it still will be a little bit controversial, but we have both the text and the texture of the Mesorah backing us that allows us to move carefully but energetically forward. And I think that, please God, that's still happening, and please God, some of you will continue to play those leadership roles in ways that you feel most comfortable, and we'll all have nachas from that. Thank you very much. Could I take one? Is there any questions that? Any questions? Did you have a question? Just a stretch. Any other questions? Yes. I don't think. I think that
title. The title she got, not based on her.
I think that the concern with the titles is not like, you know, GPATS gives a master's to women in advanced Talmud study. There are people who find that to be inappropriate, and there are many people that find that to be appropriate. There are women who are educators, as synagogue or community educators. I think there's a difference between all of those titles and saying we're going to give women the title of rabbis. I think.
Yeah, just as it's that when they give them the title of Moreno, whatever they got in California, or a spiritual guy, like they always get upset about what the title is.
No, I think there's that. I actually think that there's a difference between the two. I think there's a difference between the title of giving a woman the title as an educator, as a, you know, as a milamedet or as a yoetzet, versus a title in which we're saying that we're imitating rabbis. I think there's a difference between the two. It might sound like just a nuance, but sometimes nuances are extremely important. And I think that the reason why the other titles might, you know, there might be people who have problems with them, but I think for the most part, our community is comfortable with them is because there were conversations about those titles before they were given. They weren't just like one day we just announced, someone just announced that those titles were going to be given. There were conversations about them. And while certain communities might not totally be comfortable with them, I think the communities that we normally orbit in seem to have no problems with them because, again, I think that these are titles that evolved. And I think that they're not challenging positions to say, well, we're now going to create the fact that there are no differences between men and women. There's no separations whatsoever. And we're just going to, oh, if men can be rabbis, women can be rabbis. Well, we realize that women can't, you know, be Masada Kedushin, or maybe they can. We realize that they can't be counted in the minyan, that they're responsible for orchestrating. But the question is, again, I think that there's a slippery line that's created when you are giving titles that the Ramah had serious concerns with, as we saw in our first few sources. And also, I think more than the Ramah, there has not been any form of consensus amongst any group of poskim that we should move in that direction, as opposed to the other titles where there's been an understanding that it's important to move in that fashion. And I think all it's done is create a certain darkness, a certain challenge that has really inhibited us to move forward on some of the issues like women playing leadership roles in schools and as educators and on college campuses and in seminaries, because all of a sudden everything is confused with some of these new agendas, which I think, again, there were wonderful new advances that were being made in consultation with others. It's a shame that they got thrown into this whole mix that's now happening. Yes? Right. So therefore, I think the Sefer HaChinuch seems to be a more predominant role. But I think you also have to understand the notion of Srara. Anytime there's a checks and balances, or anytime a woman is democratically elected to a position, I'm not sure that Srara applies, even according to the Rambam. Srara is more a foisted role. It's not always a role that is, it's not a role that has checks and balances. It's not a role that is a democratically elected role. So there are, even within the Rambam, there are nuances. And clearly the Minchas Chinuch doesn't have the same concerns when it comes to extending the Melech Malka paradigm to other roles. Okay, thank you so much.
How do you understand?